We just heard from Ingrid Betancourt, who's running for president in Colombia on an anti-drug trafficking, anti-corruption platform. My guest, Stephen Dudley, is a journalist who has been based in Colombia for about 5 years. He's reported for NPR and the public radio international news program, The World. We called him in Bogota and asked him how seriously Betancourt is being taken as a presidential candidate.
She's taken seriously in that she brings up important issues, in particular for marginalized communities, indigenous groups, people who are affected by the war in terms of being war refugees, and I'm also talking about people who have been greatly affected by corruption, people who complain about corruption in public services, and she indeed led a campaign or was part of a campaign to bring that to the forefront. So in that sense, she's taken seriously. In terms of being a serious presidential candidate, I don't think so. I think in the last polls, she may have topped 1%. But, you know, I don't necessarily think that that's her objective either. I think her objective is to bring some of these issues that I mentioned to the forefront.
Who are the leading candidates in the race for the Colombian presidency?
Right now, it's shaping up into pretty much a two-person race. They happen to be from the same political party, which is one of two parties that has run Colombian politics for the last 150 years. They're both from the Liberal Party. One is, interestingly enough, sort of looked upon as kind of, let's say, a progressive liberal, and the other is looked upon as more a conservative or even right-wing liberal. One man is named Horacio Serpa, and Serpa, some of your listeners may remember, was the Minister of the Interior for a former president named Ernesto Samper. Samper was president in the mid-90s, and he basically could do nothing during his 4 years in office because he was accused of and had to admit to receiving $6 million, or at least $6 million, from the Cali cocaine cartel. Serpa, therefore, does not have the best relationship, obviously, then, with the United States. He's taken great pains to make trips to Washington and Florida to try and drum up some support in the exterior for his campaign. The other candidate is named Álvaro Uribe Vélez. Uribe Vélez is a former governor of the most important economic state here, the governor of Antioquia. He's also studied abroad. He studied at Oxford with a guy named Malcolm Dees, which some of your listeners may also know. He's a very prominent historian. And he's one of these guys who kind of, he can manage crowds. He's very charismatic. He speaks English perfectly. And he is saying the right things right now. He's very critical of the FARC rebels. He's very critical of the other rebel groups as well. And he's one of these guys who's promoted things like putting guns in civilians' hands so that they can protect themselves from guerrilla incursions or from guerrilla attempts to kidnap them. So these are the two front runners right now, and it looks like most likely they'll have the first round in May, and then they'll have a runoff then again, I think it's in August.
How much does drug money control politics in Colombia?
I would say that drug money controls a lot of different facets of Colombian life. And to sort of just single out politics is really hard. Let me explain myself. I think that drug money seeps into all corners of Colombian society, Colombian businesses, Colombian banks. It seeps into the Colombian war to a great extent, both the guerrillas and their arch enemy, the right-wing paramilitaries, make huge profits from the drug trade, whether or not they're directly involved in the drug trade or whether or not they're just taxing big drug traffickers is up for debate, but they're making a huge amount of money from that. And I think that to sort of say, well, then politics would be excluded from that entire spectrum that I just mentioned would be ludicrous. I don't think there's any question that drug money seeps into these campaigns.
Ingrid Betancourt was talking about the threats against her life And she's been subjected to many death threats over the years. She even sent her children to another country to be with their grandparents so that they would be safe after they were threatened by people connected to the drug lords. I'm wondering if that's pretty common now, if you hear a lot about death threats against people who oppose drugs and corruption.
Death threats are common in Colombia for anyone who gets involved in politics, not just those who have spoken out against corruption and drug money seeping into campaigns and and into businesses and banks and all the rest. Death threats are common for those who are speaking out for their rights as unions. Death threats are common for those who are speaking out for their rights is their rights to have potable water. Death threats are common for those who are speaking for disenfranchised communities, like I mentioned, displaced communities, indigenous communities. Death threats are just about a daily dose here. I mean, if you are a politician and you don't get a death threat, you might start thinking that you're not necessarily doing a good job. Recently, there was a major death threat and a very credible report that emerged that there was going to be an assassination attempt on a leftist candidate here, or the most leftist candidate here, a guy named Lucho Garzón. And I would be very surprised if Lucho Garzón, even makes it to the May elections. I mean, death threats here and also killings are a very, very common occurrence and have been for the last 100 years in Colombian politics. So it doesn't surprise me at all that she was threatened with death and that she will continue to be threatened with death.
No, I should mention, too, the press often faces death threats also.
The press definitely does. This is something that people have looked at pretty closely in the last few years. But it's all locals. These are local Colombian journalists who have been threatened for the most part. I only know of one case of an international journalist being threatened. And many of the cases are local in the sense that these journalists have exposed things like Ingrid Bentecour is exposed on a very local level. They may expose a lottery scam. They may expose a kickback scam at the local mayor's office, and then they will subsequently be knocked off. So this is the type of thing that happens on all levels, so not just the politicians.
And you haven't had any threats against you?
No, I haven't had any threats against me. Like I said, there's only one case that I know of where a friend of mine got a direct death threat, and since then things have cooled off. So now, so far, I mean, they seemed, the armed actors anyway, and the people who would get angry at reports that I would write, which mostly have to do with the war here, they seem to understand that there's a cost-benefit thing here, and the cost of knocking a person off like me, or any of my colleagues for that matter, is much higher than the benefit.
My guest, journalist Stephen Dudley, is speaking to us from Bogota, Colombia. We'll talk more about Colombian politics after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Stephen Dudley is joining us by phone from Bogota, Colombia. He's a freelance journalist who has reported on Colombia for NPR and the PRI news magazine The World. Colombia's presidential election will be held in May. Earlier, we heard from Ingrid Betancourt, who's running for president in Colombia on an anti-drug trafficking, anti-corruption platform. Do you feel that Ingrid Betancourt has really accomplished much in her campaign against corruption and drug money?
Well, I think Ingrid is, as are all who are fighting that fight, they're fighting a huge uphill battle. She's accomplished something in that she and her cohorts were able to put it on the agenda enough to where the president had to address the issue, to where Congress had to address the issue in a way that hadn't been seen in a number of years. But things seem to just roll right back into place. We haven't heard much from the campaign in the last few months anyway, even though they may be making a lot of noise. They're certainly not making it to the national agenda anymore, as they were when they first started out with this huge campaign. So it's one of these things that you see, and it's kind of sad because, you know, her campaign is very important. It is very important to rid this country of these corrupting influences. But they're all over, and they're very powerful people. And so for her to be able to accomplish things in the short amount of time that she perhaps wants to is probably a little bit too ambitious. And like I said, I think that things have a way of just sort of turning back to where they were, very quickly.
When you refer to the campaign, do you mean her presidential campaign or her anti-corruption campaign?
I'm referring to her anti-corruption campaign. Her presidential campaign is kind of launched on that base, on that same basis. Mm-hmm. But certainly, you know, where she began the campaign or where the campaign held the most influence was when they first started, and at the time she wasn't a presidential candidate. She and a number of others, very important people, were launching this anti-corruption campaign, and it reached the point where the president himself was announcing that they would have a referendum of sorts and look at the possibility of having new elections in Congress. There was so much corruption going on in Congress at the time, but again, that has amounted to nothing. The president had to back down. There were no elections for Congress or re-elections for Congress, and Ingrid has continued her campaign, but probably, you know, with less of an impact than she had initially.
I don't know how long you've been in Colombia, but do you think that things have improved at all since the days of the Medellin cartel? Improved in terms of corruption, violence in the street, assassinations?
I've been in Colombia off and on since 1995, probably for a total of 5 years. In my time here, things have gotten substantially worse. People do still make references to the Medellin cartel time period. When they talk about that, they talk mostly about bombs, indiscriminate bombs that were placed by Pablo Escobar and some of his associates to protest the possibility of them being extradited to the United States. The situation we have here now is a much wider scale of violence, I would say, than the Colombians had in the late 1980s and early 1990s. The recent report that I saw in terms of numbers of homicides kind of made my jaw drop. Where when I came here, it was about 25,000, and that's for a country of 40 million. Now they're talking about closer to 40,000. So that just in the last 5 years, I mean, we're talking about, what is that? I mean, 60% rise in homicides, and that's homicides across the board. That's homicides of people, you know, being robbed. That's homicides of people who are killed for political reasons. That's war-related deaths. I mean, this is across the board. So things, at least since I've been here, have gotten substantially worse.
Well, Stephen Dudley, thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, no problem.
Stephen Dudley is a freelance journalist based in Bogota, Colombia.